Is your appetite sometimes out of control? Are you unable to stop eating even when you're full? Download our new Intelligent Medicine video, Defensive Eating, Taming Your Addiction to Food. There's a physiological basis for food addiction. The food industry has gripped our brains using powerful food science. Find out what we can do about it. Go to drhoffman.com to download this important video. We will arm you with proven strategies to change your eating behavior forever. Go to drhoffman.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and our upcoming podcast, I think, is very, very appropriate for this time of year because there's one organ of the body that has been taking a real beating during holiday time. And January, of course, is the month of detoxification and rectitude, and we want to pay a special attention to our livers. Our livers are our main organ of detoxification. They get jammed with toxins when we overeat, when we consume junk, when we're exposed to environmental stuff, when we drink alcohol. And so today we're going to talk to a real expert on the subject of a real integrative approach to liver problems, which are a very, very serious challenge medically here in the United States. We'll give you some statistics in just a moment. She's Dr. Lynn Patrick. Lynn's a good colleague of mine. We've been working together for, decades. I've known her through our mutual association with the American College for Advancement in Medicine, where I think, Lynn, you've earned the distinction of being the first naturopathic physician admitted to the board of ACAM. Is that correct?
The board of, actually, there are two other NDs on the board of directors this year besides myself, but I was a consultant to the board for many years in the past.
So you're a real pioneer. She's a graduate of Bastyr University with a doctorate in naturopathic medicine, and she is also in private practice, first in Arizona and now in Colorado. She is the medical co-director at Wellness Integrative Naturopathic Center in Durango, Colorado. And she also hosts and has created a very, very impressive educational website, progressivemedicaleducation.com. We'll talk to you a little bit about some of the learning opportunities there. And she is an expert in chemical toxicity, environmental exposures, also in liver disorders, HIV infections, and in treating chronic addictions. So she also, interestingly, she's a physician member of the Hepatitis C Ambassadors Team. That's a national interdisciplinary team of providers and liver specialists seeking answers to chronic Hep C treatment through research in complementary alternative medicine. That's very cool. We'll talk about that as an important resource for you. If you're suffering or your loved one is suffering from liver problems. But without further ado, here's Dr. Lynn Patrick. Lynn, did I miss anything? Any of your impressive accolades?
I don't think so, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you for that gracious introduction.
Other than that, other than the fact that you are an impressive athlete, you know, we did a little pre-production before we began to record this podcast, and you were telling me about 8 inches of snow up at 7,000 feet. Is the elevation
that
where
is
you reside?
Correct. That's my home, and I usually exercise up on top of a mountain, which is it's an extra 1,500. So it's I exercise at about 8,000 feet or 9,000 feet. It's great for your heart. It really is a good workout.
Indeed, if you survive it. And so the things you do, you're mountain climbing, mountain biking, open water kayaking this time of year. Doing something called skate skiing, correct?
Correct. That is correct. Just think of itty-bitty little Nordic skis that you can actually skate on. They're not that itty-bitty. You know, they're about 4 feet long. But, yeah, it's a great workout. You ski on a rolled track, meaning that it's been rolled with some weight so that the snow's compacted, and you can really go pretty fast, almost like you know, as fast as you can go on ice skates.
I have trouble enough at the skating rink in Rockefeller Center, so you know, add 9,000 feet to that, and I'm not sure I would do very well. I'm just not acclimated. Okay,
it would just take you a while to acclimate. That's all.
Thank you. That's very generous of you, Lynn. So let's focus on today's topic. I mean, it is appropriate because people's livers have been taking a beating over the holidays. And why might that be? And give us some statistics on how pervasive a problem this is.
Well, there's actually, you know, I like to call it a tsunami of liver disease because I think that describes it accurately. We have a problem in most Western countries, and not just Western countries. India is actually being kind of beset by an epidemic of something called non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And what that is, my friend who's a hepatologist, Dr. Matthew Cave at the University of Louisville, likes to call it the hepatic manifestation or the liver manifestation of diabetes or metabolic syndrome. So it's not liver disease that's caused by alcohol, although if you have it and you drink, it will progress much faster. Mm-hmm. It's actually liver disease for which there is a perfect storm in the United States. And that perfect storm, if you can, you know, imagine the components, when you put them together, the sum of those components is actually greater than the individual risk factor, is that we have a pretty serious epidemic of diabetes in the United States. And not only is there a rising rate of diabetes, but there's a rising rate of something called prediabetes, which means that you don't need insulin, your blood sugars aren't that high, but your blood sugar is not regulated correctly. And we call that metabolic syndrome. And we recognized this back in the 70s, but it wasn't really accepted by the medical profession until much later, you know, probably in the 90s. And metabolic syndrome is something that you can get diagnosed with when you go to the doctor. If you have high blood fats and high blood pressure, particularly if you have weight around your belly, and this is for both men and women, you can actually get a diagnosis called metabolic syndrome. Now, all of those symptoms, including the high blood pressure, are actually a reflection of the body's difficulty with processing sugar and storing sugar. And that sugar is stored as fat in the liver. And that's what non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is. So non-alcoholic fatty liver disease actually affects 1 in 3 American adults. And when I say that, you know, and especially when I talk to doctors, which is mostly what I do, I teach in front of docs, they look at me like, well, that's impossible. And I say, no, actually, those are the statistics that are put forth by the Center for Disease Control. The problem is that the large majority of folks who have non-alcoholic fatty liver disease are diabetics, they're obese, or they have this pre-diabetic condition, which is silent. And that's the problem, is that your liver doesn't ache when you have metabolic disease. And so you would have no idea that you have non-alcoholic fatty liver disease.
Well, this might come as a real surprise to many Americans who suspect that, yeah, there are people with liver problems, but they're generally people who drink too much. You know, they kill their liver with alcohol. Or alternatively, they may have had a blood transfusion, or they may have experimented with drugs and they got hepatitis C, risky sex, whatever. And that's the main cause of liver problems in this country. But clearly, and you can give us the proportions, diet trumps these other causes of liver problems. And even if you have those other causes, it makes it a hell of a lot worse.
That is absolutely correct. I think the most telling statistic is that the surgeons at UCLA 2 years ago looked at all of the liver transplants that they had done in the prior 5 years, in the prior year, so just in that last year. And what they found is that, to their amazement and surprise, and this was a big news in the world of liver disease, you know, for hepatologists, the leading cause for liver transplants was not hepatitis C or hepatitis B or both together, but was non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And this kind of broke the silence in the medical world and also broke through the denial that this is a problem. Now, not everybody who has non-alcoholic fatty liver disease needs a liver transplant. And that's important to understand. There are some people who have the beginnings of liver disease. Non-alcoholic fatty liver disease in most people is benign and it's at that beginning stage. But it can progress to something called NASH, and that acronym stands for, you know, steatohepatitis, which is just a fancy medical word for having a lot of scarring in your liver, a lot of fat deposition and a lot of scarring. And that can lead to cirrhosis and liver cancer. So it is a very serious condition. Now, the problem is that once you progress from NAFLD, meaning non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, to NASH, it's very hard to turn around. And so obviously what you want to do is find out if you have it long before you can't turn it around. The good news is that it's absolutely reversible. The problem is that it's not well diagnosed, so that a lot of people who have this pre-diabetic condition or who have diabetes and who have fatty liver, their physician may not be interested in diagnosing the fatty liver. The physician might be more interested in getting their diabetes under control or helping them lose weight, which definitely helps the fatty liver. But it doesn't directly prevent the damage that's occurring at that moment.
And so how might you become aware that you have NAFLD? Is there a blood test that your doctor should be looking at? And, you know, I know from being in the medical profession that a lot of doctors will sometimes look at a slightly abnormal liver function test and they'll say, well, you know, it's a little high, but yeah, but that's kind of the way it is. I'm seeing a lot of patients these days like that, so that's not a biggie.
Well, this is a very controversial area, but I'm going to speak now as a hepatologist. I was trained by some of the best hepatologists in the country. I worked in the hepatitis C brainstorming team, which was a team of hepatologists and some acupuncturists and naturopathic physicians put together by a nonprofit to look at treatments for hep C. And what a hepatologist will say is, yes, liver enzymes are a great test if you use the right reference range. And the correct reference range, and this is the same in all the labs that do liver function tests in the United States, or liver enzyme tests, as we like to call them, is that an ALT, which is the main liver enzyme test that's done, has to be normal under 19 or under for a woman, and 30 or under for a man.
I'm saying now, wow, because that's so not the case when, you know, and every lab has a different norm, and some are very much more permissive than that.
And that is because when the lab did their original data sampling in their original groups, they did not remove the diabetics.
Okay, so they included, you know, what's normal is slightly sick on average,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. That's exactly true. So there are lots of good studies looking at ways to diagnose fatty liver disease, but there's actually pretty good evidence for just a good old ALT, which everybody gets when they go to the doctor for their annual physical. It's called a liver function test, but it's really a liver enzyme test if the appropriate reference ranges are used. And hepatologists have been trying for decades to teach the rest of medicine what an actual healthy reference range is for this particular liver enzyme, the most commonly tested one. And unfortunately, not a lot of progress has been made. So we've started teaching healthcare consumers how to look at their own laboratory tests and help their physicians interpret them. So that's one test. Another test is the combination of tests that are used to diagnose what's called metabolic syndrome. So any doctor knows how to diagnose metabolic syndrome. It's a combination of the actual girth of your stomach plus your blood pressure and blood lipids, and putting that together in a formula. And that's along with, you know, your BMI, which is weight and height. You know, it's a way to look at your body mass, weight relative to height, to actually diagnose metabolic syndrome. If you already have a diagnosis of metabolic syndrome, your risk for fatty liver disease is much higher than if you don't. If you're a diabetic, your risk for liver disease can be 6 to 10 times higher than if you're not diabetic. So those are the folks who are at highest risk. If you are overweight or obese, your risk is much higher. If you are severely obese, it is assumed that you have fatty liver disease, because about 98% of people who are severely obese have fatty liver disease.
How about triglycerides as a tip-off that you might have this?
High triglycerides are a tip-off. That's absolutely correct. And that's a test, again, that everybody gets done when they go in for their annual physical. So having high triglycerides is definitely something that we look at in terms of a tip-off. And as we will talk about, you know, as we go along and talk about what causes fatty liver disease, we know that triglycerides are a really good sign that the liver is losing its ability to process sugar effectively. That, you know, that someone's ability to regulate insulin or their sensitivity of their insulin is not as good as it should be. And they may also have a high fructose or a high sugar diet that will drive their triglycerides up as well. So that's a very good test. But in conjunction with all the other tests for metabolic syndrome, it can be really effective in terms of looking at risk. And for triglycerides, you know, we're looking at anything over 150 is mm-hmm. kind of the cut.
Our big cutoff.
You know, that's the risk factor, yeah.
How about the GGT test, the gamma-glutamyl transferase? Not commonly done as part of the liver panel, but it's sort of an add-on test that maybe I sometimes find more sensitive than a regular liver panel.
GGT is a very, very good test for many things. In conjunction with all the tests for metabolic syndrome, having a GGT over 35 is considered one of the screening tools for non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Okay. Now, we could get into a long conversation about what's a healthy GGT, and definitely it's lower than that, but in the actual hepatology world, having a GGT over 35, in addition to all the other things that I talked about, definitely increases risk. Now, as we'll talk about later on in the show, GGT is also an indicator of toxic load or increased body burden or exposure to environmental toxicants.
Okay. So,
as well as an increased risk for diabetes and heart disease, as you know.
Okay, so we're getting into another contributing factor, because yes, one of the pathways and possibly the most robust pathway to move you towards liver disease is with a bad diet, but another is environmental toxic exposure, and you don't have to fall into a vat of battery acid to experience that, correct?
Not at all. In fact, there's some very interesting research on this. My friend Dr. Cave, who's the hepatologist at the University of Louisville that I mentioned before, published a study where he looked at the Center for Disease Control, and their, you know, they every couple of years now they look at all the toxicants in the U.S. population, or about 5,000 people that are representative of the U.S. population. And what he did is he went into that database and he said, I wonder if there's a relationship with elevated liver enzymes and certain toxicants. And sure enough, for lead, for mercury, and for a chemical that has been taken out of commerce but is in all of our bodies, called a polychlorinated biphenyl, or PCBs, there was a very good correlation. So the higher the body burden of those metals, or the PCBs, the higher the ALT. Now, that doesn't mean that if you have higher body burden of environmental pollutants, you have fatty liver disease, but there is a correlation, and this is talked about in the medical literature all the time, that And especially in some of the animal studies, they've actually looked at exposure to bisphenol A, which is a plasticizer,
BPA.
And found that BPA, just exposure to BPA, can cause fatty liver in animals.
Okay.
Yeah, we haven't done any human studies where we've given people, you know, a bunch of register receipts and had them rub their hands
right.
in the register receipts and drink bottled water that's high in BPA.
And a lot of canned foods that are, you know, the can liners
right.
are made from BPA and so on.
Canned ravioli. But actually, we are doing that experiment on a very wide scale. It's just that, you know, we can't correlate the exposure and the result. You know, our population is basically, you know, receiving those exposures every day.
Indeed.
So there's
no control group. So it's, you know, it's hard to, unless we take somebody from a very pristine environment, which are vanishing, to see what they're like.
Right.
So another pathway that contributes to liver problems is something that is in the news every day now. You know, it seems like every day there's a new discovery about this and how it impacts health, is the microbiome. And this notion,
yes.
it's a very old notion of intestinal toxicity. You know, it dates back to, you know, the Nobel Prize winner in the early 20th century, you know, talking about the impact of gut toxins on the liver, on the body in general. So what happens when you have a disturbed microbiome that's not a happy garden?
Yes. Well, to answer that question, we have to take a couple of steps back and look at what is it in our diet that Americans probably consume about 50 to 70 grams of every day in a variety of forms, but mostly in the form of a beverage that can upset our microbiome. The answer is fructose.
Mm.
Fructose is, fruit sugar, but it's also made synthetically, and it's called high fructose corn syrup. And we imbibe shockingly high amounts. And in fact, if you have fatty liver disease, you are more at risk for having imbibing at least two or more soft drinks a day. Mm. People who don't have liver disease actually imbibe much less. They drink much less. So the problem is that high fructose diets, and we're not talking about people who eat, you know, six apples a day. We're talking about kids who consume six sodas a day and get about 120 grams of fructose every day. We know that it only takes about 50 grams of fructose a day to upset your gut microbiome. So that would be very common in males, young males, you know, young boys, age 13 to 18, they consume more high fructose corn syrup than any other demographic. What happens is that that high level of fructose changes our gut microbiome, kills off certain good guy bacteria, allows certain bad guy bacteria to grow. But even more damaging is it causes inflammation in the lining of the intestinal tract and allows those bacterial cells to go into the liver. Remember that most of the stuff that we eat, right, has to go into our liver for processing before it gets into our bloodstream. So that would also include garbage, you know, things in the gut that aren't necessarily nutrients or food. They go into that portal vein that goes directly to the liver as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a wonderful pediatric gastroenterologist named Robert Lustig. I don't know if you've had him on your show or not, but he is I consider the global expert in understanding the relationship of diet to fatty liver disease, and he has written a wonderful book on this subject. And really, you know, you can refer your listeners to prior podcasts with him.
Great.
But he concurs that what happens is this high level of fructose actually causes inflammation in the gut, allows these cell walls of bacteria to go into the liver, and basically sets off a bunch of alarms inside the liver. The liver sees these cells as foreign invaders, as in, an infection, even though these are dead bacterial cells and they can't really hurt anyone. And that causes inflammation, not just in the liver, but in the immune system. It also changes the way that the liver processes sugar, and it alters the ability of insulin to work inside the liver. So this is a domino effect. You know, think of dominoes that go all the way down the row until you get to the point that your insulin doesn't work anymore and you become diabetic.
And finally, what's the impact of all the medications that people are taking? I mean, the average American past the age of 50 is taking two or three medications. By the time you're 65, it might be five or six. So what about the detoxification burden on the liver when that
happens? Yes, all pharmaceutical drugs have to be altered or metabolized either in the liver or the kidneys. And it takes a tremendous amount of energy. And so some of the same metabolic pathways that drugs will go through, and hormones, by the way, when we metabolize testosterone and estrogen and progesterone and cortisol, they all have to be metabolized by the liver. So this puts quite a burden on the liver. And I haven't seen any actual direct studies that show that medications in general cause fatty liver, but it's just science. You know, it's known science that the more pharmaceuticals you imbibe, the harder it is on the antioxidant system in your liver. Our liver takes care of oxidative damage by using antioxidants. They're also involved in the metabolism of pharmaceuticals. And what's important about that is that fatty liver disease, it's known that fatty liver disease progresses when there aren't enough antioxidants in the liver. That's an accepted part of why people get fatty liver disease. It's talked about in the medical literature all the time. Antioxidant deficiencies. So there are actually lots of studies that show that non-alcoholic fatty liver disease will progress when there is too much stress. We call it oxidant stress. So the things we've talked about, environmental chemicals, pharmaceutical drugs, dietary excesses of fructose, and by the way, alcohol does the same thing, puts the same metabolic stress on the liver. Decreases the liver's ability to fight back and basically uses up antioxidants. And if someone has fatty liver disease, that will cause progression of the fatty liver disease. So antioxidants obviously are very important for normal, healthy liver function.
Well, you've done an excellent job of running down some of the various causes of our epidemic, our tsunami, as you call it, of fatty liver disease. And so, as our listeners know, we divide these podcasts into two parts. And when we return in part two, which I hope you'll join us for, we're going to talk about solutions. We're going to talk about proper diet. We're going to talk about proper supplements. Of course, certain supplements potentially to avoid if you're suffering from these types of problems. Our guest is Dr. Lynn Patrick. She's a naturopathic physician and a published author of numerous articles in peer-reviewed medical journals on the subject of natural treatment for liver disease. We'll be right back with part two of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman.